You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, this is Lizzie Hale from Hailstorm.
Hey, what's up? This is Chadis from Hell Yeah and Mudvayne.
This is Ron Bumblefoot Fall.
Hey, this is Barbara Ann Wild.
And this is Daniela Clark.
This is Johnny from Art of Dying.
Hey, this is Mixie from Stitched Up Heart.
Hey, this is Nick Reese from Joyous Pool.
Hey, this is Josh from Bad Flower. Welcome aboard the ship making way. Fuck!
Hey, this is Ralph Sutton.
This is Aaron Jones.
What's going on, gang? Zach Wild here. And you're listening to Making Waves, the Shipwrecked Podcast.
Making Waves.
Welcome to Making Waves, the Shipwrecked Podcast. This is episode 58. We are part of the Sound Talent Media family and the fastest growing rock podcast in the world, and we have the numbers to back it up. We have nearly 6,000 downloads this year alone, and our community is larger and more evolved than ever. So thank you so much for your support. And remember to review, rate, subscribe, and share. Well, tonight, episode 58 brings us a multi-faceted, talented performer in a name. Her name is Alicia Taylor. So Alicia, thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us.
Alicia, if you guys aren't familiar with her, she is the founder, director, manager, and, well, basically the figurehead for the Cherry Bombs burlesque, and I like to say burlesque and fire act.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. There you go.
Everybody kind of has their own interpretation, so I'm always curious to hear what people call it.
Well, I just, from seeing your performances and being familiar with what you do, I kind of felt that was something that was like, well, you know, there's burlesque and then there's burlesque with fire, which is kind of like, you know, next level stuff.
Yeah.
I like thinking about it as experiential. Like it's like a thing that's all encompasses, but like, I think you could even go like theater style on it, you know?
So absolutely. Like, this is pure performance art for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've seen it like four times, I think. So, and each time it's been in a different type of venue.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I've seen it in small rooms at the Roxy. I was at that show, and then I saw it on the Steel Panther Stone Sour tour. I've seen it at Sturgis. So, and then I've seen it at another like club that you guys were on the road with Stone Sour and Steel Panther.
Oh wow! Okay, Sturgis.
And Sturgis, yes.
Which year? This year?
No. 17 or 18.
Oh man. Okay.
My band played, at the time, I forget the room. We didn't play the Buffalo Chip, but I believe that you guys were performing at the Buffalo Chip. Whatever the opposite of the Buffalo Chip is, we were performing that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. We were at a venue called Glencoe that year.
That's,
wow.
Did you see? Yeah. This is where I get murdered, huh?
Get out of him.
Would you rather? Anyone.
Well, so you guys, Cherry Bombs, just got off the road. You just finished up a summer tour with Corey Taylor at CMFT. Is it CMFT? Yeah. Corey?
Yeah.
Is it,
it's CMFT. Yes,
Corey motherfucking Taylor.
Taylor, there you go. And Corey is your husband, so that must have been a nice family, little family outing there. But yeah. And then you guys are, I guess, coming up. The next big thing is going to, well, it's a huge thing, is the Knotfest show in L.A.
Yeah,
which I ask you, with a show that size and a building that size, how do you guys transfer what you do to a larger crowd like that? How do you guys work that out? Do you plot it differently than you would like a theater or an arena show?
Yes, absolutely. All of our shows kind of change depending on the room that we're in. As you saw, Chad, if it's smaller, we scale things down. If it's bigger, we can go as big as the room will let us, you know, regarding safety and all that stuff. So it won't be not unlike Knotfest Mexico in Bogota when we went down there. Those were really big stages as well. Mm-hmm. But I have some little surprises up my sleeve for LA for sure, that we haven't done before. So, and they're going to be big and massive and really cool to see, I think. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, I just let my imagination run wild. And when I have a big stage like that, it's so much fun because my aerialists, you know, the higher they are, the better they are and the more fun they're having. You know, when you have rig points that are 40 feet in the air, they can do the unthinkable from that height. It's great. And they can do bigger drops and make these incredible, the fun really comes in.
It sounds very much like you're thinking, well, what would Rammstein do if they were us?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I would like to get in a room with Till and just, you know, bad ideas.
We've got women flying above us at 40 feet. What would you do? I shoot them out in the sky with fire.
Everything on fire.
They'd be the Phoenix floating down.
Which is kind of what we've done. You know, we made an apparatus. I engineered it and I was like, it's an aerial apparatus and it goes in the air. And I said, well, can we just set this thing on fire? And my aerialist was like, I think so. And I was like, okay, let's just try it. So
might be a one and done, but let's just give it a go.
But hey,
let me ask you, you basically built this contraption. Do you have any kind of background in engineering, physics, or mathematics in order to do such a thing?
No, but I do understand. I do work with fabricators and that's their department. So I bring them my ideas and my sketches. Mm-hmm. And I make sure that the sizing is appropriate for the performer. And we make sure we use materials that are appropriate for the weight and the height and the dynamic loads that these performers are going to be putting on these apparatuses. So drops and spinning and all these kinds of things. So there is a little bit of a science element to it. That's really mm-hmm. fun. But I don't claim to be a scientist by any means.
Well, no, I understand. You bring your ideas and they kind of realize it for you. I think it's also just listening to that. You're talking about weight loads and like that. It's just people tend to forget about all the physics that go into such an act. It's not like hey, we're just going to knock out a few numbers here. There's a lot going on here that does obviously walk the fine line of being dangerous. But that's absolutely part of that's why we're bringing you this show. And that's why you really should appreciate it because some of them could leave here like limping.
Broken neck.
So let me ask you, have you ever been injured during one of your shows?
Other
than a twisted ankle, something a little bit more severe.
No, I'm very, very
knock on wood.
Very, very lucky.
I guess I'll do it too as well. This is wood.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I assure you.
Minor burns here and there that come with it, you know, inside of your mouth, if you're eating fire in the wind. You know, I've caught my eyelashes on fire when I was eating fire again in the wind. I set a drum kit on fire by breathing fire once. And this piece of hair just came down right in front of me and it caught that, but that's real all minor stuff.
I love the wind is your worst enemy.
You ever like throw a blaze of grass before you do it? Like you're hitting a 9-iron from the fairway. I better check what the wind's doing.
Yeah. I watch the wind. But then I'm like, I'll be fine.
Is your least favorite movie Gone with the Wind?
Quest for Fire.
I have a question about the, here's my, since I've seen it so many in so many different like types of rooms and you've toured with it now. And as a person who's spent the majority of my, finer years on the road, those 30 or 40 days that they are in a row and each room is different. How are you looking? And again, the stage size is different. So are you looking at it like getting production specs in, or are you looking at it like, okay, if this is my, if I know the headliner, for instance, on the Stone Sour tour, if I know that this is how much space I get on stage every night, that's my confines. But if you walk into a room, for instance, that you've never, you know, been into before and you see, oh shit, there's hang points here. Do you on the fly start, do you bring that on the road? I guess is what I'm asking. How do you?
Yeah, we kind of attack it from both ends. Obviously the advancing stage is really important when it comes to our show. And I'm a part of that as is one of my techs. And that's when we really get the nitty gritty on as far as numbers go with stage size and stage heights. And if they have points and where they're located and how high is the stage, that sort of thing. And so that at least gives me kind of a blueprint on what I'm going to get into when I get there. a lot of times we get there and it is not the same as we are told. But the headliner, we get a heads up on how much space do you think you guys need to your drum riser? And then that gives me an approximate amount of space that I can work with. And depending on the distance that we have or the depth that we have, I should say, that will allow me to determine, okay, we're going to strike this. We're going to do this here. Maybe we try and get an aerial point or find one in the audience that's safe. Maybe we take our fire down to three performers instead of five. Yada, yada, yada. So, and we bring everything when we load in and, or when we head out for a tour, we bring all of our rigging equipment, all of our fire equipment. We bring absolutely everything for every scenario that we walk into.
Yeah. Awesome. So that leads into that's obviously great planning. And also communication is key there. But when you're on the situations where, well, how many people do you bring on the road in that scenario as performers? And are they revolving like a revolving cast? And then what about your actual crew? Is there like a situation where you like scale up and down?
Yeah, that comes down to budget, really. As it usually does. With performers, depending on the length of time that we can perform, usually determines how many performers. So if we're performing for an hour, I like more performers. I'm able to create a show that feeds performers in and out at different times. So it gives them breaks and time to change wardrobe while other things are going on. So typically I like to do a show between 5 and 7 performers. I'm not a fan of doing things with less than 5 because for me, visually, the formations and the shapes you can make with even numbers, just I'm not a huge fan of. So I like to stick between 5 and 7. With crew, you know, we never had crew until that Stone Sour run, which was in 2017. And we had one crew member. Before that, we were it. We load in, load out. We set our stuff up, we take it down, we rig, we de-rig, we do everything. And in a weird way, that's kind of a good thing because it's important for everybody to know what's happening.
Yeah. Can I ask you, when you're awesome. Growing up, we all have pivotal moments in rock and roll, obviously with pyro and production. Mine was when my age was basically, it opened up the gatefold of Kiss Alive 2 and there it is in all its glory. Like, holy shit, what did they just do? Was there something like for you, maybe like, hey, it's a Motley show or an Alice Cooper show where you're like, wow, the pyro is pretty badass. I think I want that in my life. Or were you just a pyro maniac when you were growing up?
I kind of was a little weird kid. Like when I was like 12 and 13, I had all these candles. And I don't know if you guys remember this, but like Hot Topic used to sell this candle that would drip. It was white and it would drip colors when it melted. Mm-hmm. Do you remember this?
Did it drip? I used to work at Hot Topic. So definitely.
Oh, did really? Okay.
Chad did.
And Spencer's Gifts. I was like a mom.
Oh, all right. So I don't know if
this is. Did you work at Journeys too?
I did. I managed it. Seriously.
Who are you?
That guy.
Yeah.
A bad employee.
Yeah. You had a genre though. You definitely worked the circuit.
Yeah.
Alicia, so that you're so growing up, you felt you were like a little weird. I like candles and kind of Hello Kitty, macabre kind of stuff. But was there like a moment in like being a rock and roll and metalhead as you are, was there a time where like, was there a certain instance in that aspect of things where you're like, wow, that's so fucking cool. And you kind of store it in your head and go, and then years later, that becomes part of what your life is.
I never knew that I would fall in love with fire, really at all. It never hit me until I actually tried it. So when I was really young, I used to take all sorts of different types of dance. I've done every type of dance you can imagine. And one of the types that I've learned is Tahitian and hula. And it was the poi balls in that. And that was, you know, I was really good at it at the time. And so that was the first prop that I gravitated to. I was like, okay, well, let's try adding fire to our show. And one of my performers, Constance, was a magician's assistant for like 15 years before that, right? So she's like circus. And she knew all the fire arts, fire safety, ate fire, all the things. So she said, okay, I'll teach you. And we were looking at props and she started showing me, well, first she taught me all the safety. And then once I had that underneath my belt, we started playing with props and I just felt really comfortable with it. Like I didn't have a fear. I had a respect, but I just felt it just came really naturally to me, to manipulate it and perform with it. And so, I started with poi and then I went to fans and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. So yeah, I just kind of accidentally. Into it out of curiosity, really.
Yeah. Fire's an unusual thing. I mean, we love the flame of a candle or a fireplace or fire pit, but then you get that point where you get to the dangerous aspect of what fire is. And then not so much romance anymore, but I was curious, obviously we wanted to get to your ability to fire breathe. Was this something you ever, obviously you had instruction from someone, but was there ever a time where you're like, hey, maybe you should give Gene Simmons a call.
Yeah. Fire breathing is one of the most dangerous fire acts you can perform just because there's so many things that can go wrong when you do it. And I'm sure you've seen a YouTube video of it going wrong.
Sure.
In there and,
you know, Gene.
And as I progressed with fire, I just wanted more and I wanted it to be bigger and I wanted to do bigger things. And I'm just always like pushing myself to see how far I can go. And I really kind of like that with everything. Just a little bit of an extremist, I guess. And so that was like the biggest, best thing I could think of at the time. So I really started honing that in and I love it. It's the coolest feeling in the world just to see this giant fireball in front of your face and it comes back and it starts to kiss you back. It's weird. And it sounds so loud.
Oh, I don't even know how you concentrate on anything else besides that ball of, you know, 1100 degree heat.
But it's very romantic. That's what I took away from the whole thing. She's like, wow, you're like speaking, dancing.
She is the queen of the dragons.
The mother
of the dragons. Yeah. So it's funny, interesting, when you talk about dance and fire, we do think about the islands. We think about the Tongan dancers and the ones in Fiji and everything like that. Obviously Hawaii as well. So it's super interesting to see that you guys have almost kind of have that aspect, but you're tattooed and your metal and all these other aspects of modern culture. So
yeah,
that's interesting.
Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
You just got off the road, right? Like recently you guys were on the road.
Yeah, we got home. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Feels like forever. About 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago.
If you don't mind me asking, how did it feel given the state of things? And I have a parlay into a second question about venues and all of the restrictions that are in place at this point. So I guess we can start there. We haven't gotten to speak to many artists who have done like multiple dates, for instance, you know, since we've started the podcast. First of all, I'd love to know, what was it like in those rooms?
Depending on the room. So we did two legs of this tour. We had the first one in May and June, and that was about 25 dates over 33 days. It was a pretty intense tour, three on, one off the entire time. And then we had the second leg, which was the most recent one, which was 8 dates. For Cherry Bombs, it was 7 because unfortunately we had to cancel the show. And so it was a very short run, but that one felt like forever. You know, and they were two totally different feeling tours because on the first one, when Corey and I were planning that in like January, February, it was a much different time with COVID, right? And we thought, okay, well, how can we bring live events back? How can we do this safely? How can we do this responsibly? And so we said, okay, we're going to do temp checks at the door. We're going to do masks required. We're going to do low capacity, 25 to 30% capacity, socially distanced groups that can be in little playpens or whatever. No meet and greets. We're in a bubble, all the things, right?
Yep.
And we were very stringent on those requirements that we wanted. We actually wanted a negative COVID test and or vaccination required. But then we were told, no, you can't say that. That's illegal. You can't do that. And remember, this is before like Lightning was like, or AG or any of these like current things that are happening are in place. So it's really interesting because things were just changing so rapidly. I think as we all kind of know with the virus. Yeah. So when we were like, okay, well we can work with what we got. So we did the temp checks and the masks required and all that. And that first leg was really great. I felt really good about it. There were some rooms that were a little questionable as far as the audience and social distancing, but for the most part, they were really great. Because it was reduced capacity, it was tricky, you know. Ticket prices had to be a little bit higher to make up for that sort of thing. And we of course all had to kind of come down and rates and things as far as money goes, because we just wanted to see if we could make this happen. And it was important.
Yeah. Ultimate guinea pigging.
Yeah. So that was the first leg. Second leg. So we were planning the second leg during the first one because we were getting so many requests for booking this tour to continue. Well, at the time, the Delta variant wasn't really a thing during that first leg. It was like there was rumblings, but it wasn't really popping up a lot. You weren't really hearing about it. In fact, people were getting really optimistic. They were like, oh my gosh, like cases are going down. CDC says we don't have to wear a face mask anymore if we're vaccinated, you know, so there was a lot of information that was coming out and then changing right in between these two tours. And I mean, it was like a matter of weeks. Okay. So like, and I feel like we all felt it.
Yeah.
So that second leg was open. From what I saw, it was not face mask required. And I don't think they were doing temp checks at the door. It was set as if things were heading on the up and up from that first leg. Yeah. And that felt a little scary to me. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to poke the bear on it, but it's interesting to hear it from somebody like yourself, who was in the room and could see the real time, like transition from, oh, this isn't, we're on our way to hold up. Wait a second. There's something going on. And, how do we make the best of what we're able to do? Because you have this human psyche, you have the idea of what you love and the art that you're creating and presenting it the best way you can. And also the incredible responsibility of what those fans who had already purchased tickets or whatever are. Do you reschedule? Well, who's going to have time? You know, when's that going to happen? Right. So I would assume there's got to be super stressful. And that you answered the other question I was going to say is like, did you guys scale down those rooms and how do they feel? And, you know, the pod things, for instance, in the drive-in shows, I don't know if you did any of those, but here in Michigan, I had a bunch of them scheduled. And then we ended up being able to open up a little bit more because of that. We were in the same situation. Now it's all the way back down. It's scary. And, thank you for giving us a little bit of the inside scoop. We just haven't stepped foot in those spaces
yet. Yeah. It's a trail that has not been blazed yet. And I think artists and everybody are trying their best to navigate this. But at the end of the day, I don't think anybody really knows enough about this virus or what's happening or how it's mutating and all. I mean, we know one thing and then it changes so quickly. So, the best thing we can do is just adapt as best as we can.
Yeah.
You know, and you adapt or you die, really. Yeah. So that's just the best thing we can do at this point is just try and figure out how to maneuver this. And we're going to mess up along the way, right? People are going to mess up because this is uncharted territory for us. And I think everybody's just doing the best that they can, hopefully.
It's a very beautiful way to put it. We're going to mess up. We're all humans.
Yeah.
You know, and we're just trying. So yeah, that's great. Thank you for giving us that info.
Before we go to the next question I have for you, and it'll probably take a little long, I'm going to get this commercial break in real quick, and then we'll be going live shortly hereafter. Set up. Hey, folks, at this time, we'd like to remind you that not only are you listening to a kick-ass podcast right now, but we also produce an amazing rock-themed cruise called Shiprocked. We'll be sailing to Costa Maya and Cozumel on the 12th voyage Voyage. In January of 2022, sail away into middle oblivion with Lamb of God, I Prevail, From Ashes to New, Steel Panther, and Alicia and the Sherry Bombs. So cabins are still available, very few of them. So go to shiprock.com and pick one of those up right now, or find maybe other people that are looking for a cabin mate and get on there and make friends before we start the cruise. So anyway, my next question, obviously we've heard about the shock and awe of what the show is with the fire and your performance, but I'd like to get to the intrinsic part, which is the dancing. When did you start dancing? When did you get an interest in dancing?
As soon as I could walk, I would just turn circles, and my father would play music really loudly in our house. And I would just grab my little Ernie doll from Bert and Ernie, and my mother was like, okay, I get it. We gotta put her in dance class. And so as soon as I hit three, went into a dance class, and that was all she wrote. Just never stopped.
Wow. So, I mean, was it, obviously we'll get to a point when you decided, hey, I'm going to go into the NFL and become a cheerleader here. Were you dancing through high school? Was it something you were in competitions? Were you competitive, or was it just like Friday night dances at the high school and that's where you really shone?
I was a studio trained dancer my whole life. Studio competitions, performing groups, that sort of thing. And then in high school, my high school didn't have a dance team. And so I started it. I created it. Okay. Which is weird, right? It's kind of like foreshadowing.
So no.
If I would have known that that was a sign that this is what I should have done, I would have done Cherry Bombs a lot sooner. But yeah, I created my high school's first dance team, and they're still going, and they like go to state every year. It's really cool.
Yeah. Do they have a plaque up with your name on it?
I don't know. I don't know.
You're going to be the honoree at the homecoming parade coming up pretty soon. So you better prepare that speech.
Like, we don't talk about her.
No, absolutely.
You're going to get that wave. Don't forget the wave.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. So it's funny how when we think of rock and roll, people think of rebellion, we think of individuality, but you've obviously been part of this whole team at the standard with forming the dance group in high school, then going on and being part of the cheerleading group, and then forming and creating a collective of performers for Cherry Bombs. It sometimes goes against with the ethos of what we think of, like, I'm the loner, I'm the metalhead. I no one understands me, but then you hear you are and you're like, okay, girls, let's get to it.
Let's go, girls. Yeah.
Speaking of let's go, girls. Hey, welcome everyone on Facebook. Thank you for joining us on Facebook Live. We're here with Alicia Taylor from the Cherry Bombs. If you guys have some questions, please, let's start seeing them. We're going to continue on with our conversation with Alicia. And remember, guys, best questions, you guys win big prizes. So let's get those in. And again, let's continue with Chad and Alicia.
So yeah, I wanted to ask, like, so you've been a trailblazer since the Bert and Ernie days, and all the way through that to high school. Starting, you know, for those that are joining us right now, Alicia, there was not a competitive, I guess, a cheerleading squad at all. Period. Is that what I'm understanding, or is it just competition style cheerleading didn't exist in your school, and you said, "Fuck it, I'm doing them. I'll be the one to start this thing."
I did cheerlead in high school for 2 years. And it just wasn't for me. The dancing wasn't what I like to do. It was my cheerleader dancing. I like to move in a different way. So that's why but there was a blip of a cheerleader thing. And then of course the NFL.
So then how did that happen you know, you're moving from like here, you just started this whole program. You graduated and you're moving on to the next Bert and Ernie moment in your life, if you will. Where did you go from high school to in between that and, I guess, being a part of the Atlanta Falcons?
Well, I went to college in Hawaii. I lived in Hawaii, and then I lived there for 6 years. And I got married to somebody in the military, and then he got stationed in Georgia. So we went to Georgia, and I was missing dance terribly, and I was missing performing terribly. And I thought, okay, well, I'm in Georgia. the Atlanta Falcons are here. And for those of you that don't know, NFL cheerleaders aren't like high school and college cheerleaders. NFL cheerleaders are really dancers with pom-poms. That's my best description that I can, except for, you know, there's a couple teams that do like cheerleader traditionally stuff like stunting and whatnot. But majority of NFL teams, they're dancers. They're doing technique, they're doing turns and leaps. So I also really like football. So I thought, okay, well, why not? I'll just go audition. And I just went for it, even though I lived 100 miles away.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah. So I would drive, and just go and then rehearse 2 times a week, every week, and then game day. And I did that for 3 years.
Where were you? Sorry, I don't think I understood. Where did you grow up?
I'm kind of a little bit of a globetrotter. I grew up in the Seattle area.
Oh, I just got back. That was where I flew in from today. Okay.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. And so Seattle to Hawaii.
Yeah.
To
Georgia.
And then, so you're here, you are crushing it, right? All the way up to this. Now you're crushing it on the big field. I don't even know. I'm not a football guy, so I don't really know what you would call that. How long were you doing that for before you decided to change directions with your skill set?
You mean like from NFL to cherry bombs?
Yeah. Well, I would have guessed that there was maybe some sort of transitional thing, or one day did you wake up and you're like, I'm going to do this.
I went right into it. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I've always been a fan of rock and metal. That's always where my heart was. And even back in like, okay, the high school dance team days, we were performing to like Rob Zombie and stuff like that, because I just dug it. I just thought it was cool. So NFL is not that, right? It's very much pop oriented, but I wasn't there for the music. I was there because I loved performing and I enjoyed football. And I thought, you know, and the community outreach part was really cool. But then I got, you know, you do it so long, and then I could only hear Justin Bieber and Katy Perry for so long.
How long is that, by the way? I usually go about two or three spins and I'm done. How about you?
I mean, it was a lot more than that. So okay. It was enough to, yeah. There was one game in particular, I'll never forget it. It was a Christmas game. And so that's at the end of the season, right? Football season is December. And I was holding a giant candy cane, you know, I was dancing on the field to like a Justin Bieber Christmas song. And I just said, this is it. This is it. This is my, nope. I'm back. And I already started thinking, okay, like I don't want to quit performing because I still love this, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it my way. And I just, as soon as I said, bye guys, love y'all, I'm going to go do my thing. Boom.
Oh, you didn't do the classic. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. You're cool. Fuck wow. You. Drop the fucking candy cane and leave.
Well, you know what? In the Taylor household, Christmas must be quite interesting in the Taylor household. It just brings back all these trigger memories. So two things real quick. So it's funny you mentioned Rob Zombie, because when I think Rob Zombie cheerleaders, I think about the video for Never Gonna Stop, when it's just Rob and the band and the cheerleaders.
Yeah. You know, well, Rob can do no wrong in my eyes. Okay. So he can have cheerleaders.
No, I think that's great. Just a great juxtaposition of like you dancing that and going, wait, Rob uses cheerleaders. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's rad. It's, yeah, he's definitely like right up there for me. I just really love what he does, but you're right.
All right. I'm going to ask you something, and you don't have to have allegiance to your former employer, but you mentioned football. Who's your team?
I'm split Ooh. Between Seattle Seahawks and Atlanta Falcons because sense. You know where I'm from and where I had really cool memories.
Well, they're not the same division, so you kind of get away
with it. I know. And they're both in the NFC. So,
but the playoffs must just suck for you if they've got to face each other, but just a win-win, but a lose-win. And
I mean, okay. So win-win. I cheered the years that I cheered were 2010, 11 and 12 and Seattle came to the Georgia Dome and it was the NFC championship game. And
did Atlanta win?
It's like one of two things, right? You're either like super stoked all the time because no matter what's happening, you're like, yeah. Or you're like, oh, it's a weird feeling for sure.
Who do you have more jersey? Do you have more Falcons or Seahawks jerseys?
I probably have more Falcons because when you're cheerleader,
you're a Falcon fan, then you're the Falcons win.
No, they give it to you. They just dump you with all the.
Here's last night's merchandise. We need to get rid of this stuff. We need to get off the inventory for taxes.
Yeah, they're like,
take it.
Yeah, they're like, hey, Russell is a sponsor. You're gonna get everything.
You want a beanie? Right? Here's a beanie.
Yeah, you want a beanie? Here's some socks. Here's some mittens.
That's right.
I mean, yeah.
So let's fast forward through all of this and let's get to January of 2022, not the cruise, but let's get to the show coming up. Is that, help me pronounce it, please. Is it Macabre?
No, I want to hear you say it.
Macabre.
Yeah, Macabre.
Macabre. See, okay. I thought that, because when I first read it, I was going, okay. I looked at it first and I was like, Macabre, are they redoing Macbeth? But in their own special way. This is going to be super interesting. How very Shakespearean. This is going to be nuts. Then I started looking at it more and more. Yeah, a lot of balls of fire. And then I thought, well, okay. What? Oh, macabre. So this is almost like, it's like a post-Halloween performance.
Kind of. Yeah. And I love that because I love hearing everybody's pronunciation of it. It's that Macabre.
You know what I forgot about? I forgot about the accent.
Macabre.
I thought cabaret and then an M-A. Macabre. Macabre. Okay, macabre. Sorry.
Somebody called it macrame.
that should be the
logo.
Part two.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
we're gonna, before you get into that, we have a question from Steve, and this is actually super funny. And I didn't think about it until you wrote it. Steve, you are a true gentleman. You obviously were just recently in Vegas. You've seen Allegiant Stadium, right? Uh-huh. What do you think of the new giant Roomba? Which is basically this.
I will never look at it the same now.
No.
At first, it was kind of like, is this like something out of Star Wars? Is it, you know, it looks crazy. But now all I'm going to see is a Roomba. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is it? I'm sorry. I don't mean to be that guy.
The Allegiant Stadium is the Las Vegas Raiders new football stadium. And it looks like a giant Roomba.
Oh, okay. I got it.
Yeah,
I don't, but I got it.
It's architecturally beautiful. It's stunning. But
and it cleans your floors.
I don't know anymore.
And it bumps in the walls and it drives the cat crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And occasionally beeps when it's stuck.
Does the top open up? Just out of curiosity, I don't want to derail us here, but is it one of those
enclosed? It's enclosed. I don't know if you want that sun coming up on you when you're like, third and 20.
That could be the secret weapon of how to like totally fuck the other team.
The 12th man is
open it up when they're on.
That's the 12th. The 12th man is the ceiling. Open it up, Bob.
Is that against any rules? Do we know if we can do that?
Well, there's plenty of stadiums. I mean, obviously, Cowboys have an open stadium, and there's several that have it. So,
but I mean,
can you do it during the game?
Yeah. So when we're on defense, can we just start?
I think if there's a heavy rain or like maybe the weather's a little inclement, but I don't know.
Okay.
What if it's just a little stuffy in there?
No, this is no smoking facility. It's a no smoking facility.
Okay.
No, it's a fixed dome. It's a fixed story, Steve. Steve's really honest. Steve must do the tour every week. Steve,
everybody can have a little bit of fun here.
Yeah, fuck you, Jesus. Steve, and your facts. Christ, next thing you know. Next thing you know, the Easter Bunny doesn't fucking exist. Yeah.
Make some kids cry tonight.
Anyway, let's pivot back to Macabre. Macabre. So tell us about the show. Or don't give away too much because I know it's a live stream.
It is.
And we definitely want people to tune in and purchase tickets. And we'll get all that information from you shortly and how they can purchase tickets for this thing. Because it's a good lead into you guys coming on. We just say you're honing your act for Shiprock.
Yes. So Macabre is, like you said, it's a live stream and we debuted it January 1st of this year and it had great reception and I wasn't sure how people would think of it because I don't know if you guys have seen it, but, it's kind of like a, if I were to describe it, like a really long visual album it's an hour long visual album with the playlist, and it's a storyline, and it's all of the acts that we do that take you through from start to finish, by way of this male character who I call him the Mantagonist. He's kind of this seedy male, kind of rough around the edges type of guy. And he breaks down in the middle of the desert, and he comes across the saloon, and it's the only option for him. And he goes in, and then all hell breaks loose, and he's trying to find his way out. And
it sounds like From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah. It's a little bit of like Dante's Inferno meets Dusk Till Dawn meets
Russ Meyer film.
Cirque du Soleil.
Cirque du Soleil. Perfect.
Yeah. And like I said before, Rob Zombie is someone I really admire. And so his film work is something that was a huge influence in shooting this. So I wanted that kind of grainy, raw, renegade feel. Nothing too perfect looking or anything like that. But
What did you think of Lords of Salem?
You know, I didn't like it as much as I wanted to, but I didn't hate it.
It's like a Ken Russell film from the 70s. A little, yeah.
Yeah. The storyline was okay. It kind of lost me there. I have not seen Three from Hell yet, which I really want to. But I really love Devil's Rejects.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, we just had Bill Moseley on 2 episodes ago.
Oh, cool.
We went over all this. So yeah, it's a nice adjoiner here. Were you a fan of the films? And then we had the star. So that's great.
Yeah.
So this thing is going to play out. I the lovely Shannon Gunn sent us a little bit of a preview clip. So we kind of got a short understanding on it.
Cool.
But it's,
I watched the first one or two, I got to see like the preview clip of it as well. And then, I wasn't home during the live stream and I couldn't find the restreams. But I did purchase a ticket and, because I heard it was all storyline based. And as a person that's like fans of things like Beyonce's Lemonade and all those other different like moving picture albums and things like that, I wanted to like really
hone in. Cool.
Who's playing the lead, the male lead, or this guy that gets
three men are.
I was like, I don't know him. Three.
Yeah. Cool. So I shot it in a way where you don't actually see his face until the end. So when you see it, it's actually three different guys playing this character. And I did that because when I was shooting it, I wanted to do it from his perspective. And I didn't want you to get too lost in what he was going to look like. And I wanted it to translate onto a stage where the audience was the male character and we were performing to you. I didn't want like a male character standing awkwardly on stage the whole time, like reacting to everything. That felt weird. So that's why.
That's amazing.
Now, are the actors that you're speaking of, are they people that we might know of?
One is my husband, Corey Taylor. So he was available and, it's like, I attribute it to kind of like when you're in a band and you're shooting a music video and you're like, man, we need a girl in here. Okay. Who's got a girlfriend that's available? Yeah. Okay. So it felt very much like that. Like, hey honey, I'm doing this project. I need you to can you just fill in? And one of the girls, her boyfriends did it as well. Oh. So we were just kind of pulling like,
sure.
And then, another one is, actually our male performer, which I've never brought in a male performer before, into Cherry Bombs, and he's a fire performer, and he's the one that really takes you through it at the end there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Now, is the male performer someone that you consider bringing into the group going forward, or is it just specifically for this show?
Right now, I brought him in because I specifically wrote this part for him.
Gotcha.
I have two other shows kicking around in my head that I've written. I don't know if that will include a male part right now or not. I think it's interesting. I think it's unexpected, and I think it adds kind of a cool energy to the show. So I don't know. I'll have to see, like, as I'm writing these shows out and fleshing them out, if it feels right in there.
Let me ask you. So you produced, created, directed this thing. Come up with concepts, and obviously the ideas start flowing. You're like, I've got these other ideas. How do you pace yourself on ideas? Because I know a lot of creatives, they just want to knock this stuff out. Like, yeah, I got to get it out of my system. How do you pace yourself as a creative person with direction and everything else, and just kind of slowing the tempo of it down, saying, hey, I'm going to be patient about how I release these things?
What's pacing?
Well, it's funny because it changes, because it's so funny because we think about the 70s when bands like Kiss, who we mentioned before, would put out two albums per year and then still tour 8 months out of the year. And like, how the fuck do you do that? That's pacing, I guess, at that level. But in pacing like this, like, we're going to put out the show in January. Then I'll probably get around to one in maybe November, and we'll put it out the next January, and you just kind of make it a yearly thing. Or you go, I got to have it out by April. I got to have it out by October. And then boom.
It's really hard to I think the hardest it is when you create something, you're just going all in, balls to the wall, and you just want to and it's like this thing inside of you, you just got to get out. But for me, I'm also a perfectionist, and it's a sick, twisted thing to deal with, because it's like, oh man, like, let's do this now. And like, let's change this a little bit. I'm like, let's make this a little bit better. So I have to force myself to say, leave it, let it go, walk away, come back after you've slept, and then look at it again from a different angle. And then I also do like to plan ahead in the year and think, okay, what's a good month to release this? How long can we promote this for? Because that's when my business mind starts kicking in. So then I'm like, okay, we got this many weeks to promote. That's a good amount of time. Release it here, keep promoting it here. And then that can segue into like what we have, like our YouTube series, Girl Gang. So that's a nice kind of seamless segue into that as well. So I'm always kind of doing this and thinking ahead, but it is difficult.
Yeah. Hey, real quick, I want to get there. We're getting an immense amount of people that are a huge fans of yours and are looking very forward to seeing you on Shiprock. So I just wanted to pass that along. So thank you guys for saying such nice things. But if you got any questions, we still have time here with Alicia. So please don't be shy. Come on, get those questions. I'll change the name up if you're shy. Just, you know, give me some questions. Anyway, Chad, do you want to, what are we going to do with Ms. Taylor here as far as the Mrs. Taylor? Sorry, sometimes I screw that up. What are we going to do here as far as the,
I mean, if we're going to take some questions from the fans, maybe we just do walk the plank and we'll bust out like a, we'll bust out like,
fine.
Well, I'm just saying, unless you have a question, what do you want to do, Alicia?
No, listen, we have a question. Okay. What inspires you to dance? This is courtesy of Dawn. She wants to know what inspires you to dance.
Currently inspires?
Well, just
in general,
but wait, just in general.
So dancing for me became my outlet, emotionally. And, it was a way to physically exert myself, so that I could essentially kind of level out. So for me, it's like, it's very much a mental health, emotional thing. If I'm not exhausted, with dance and performing, or even just kicking around in the studio, you know, I'm not happy. I don't feel like myself. And so really my health is what keeps me going.
Good. One other question we had, Karen wants to know, have you ever thought of doing a permanent show in Vegas or a residency?
I get asked that one a lot. I think if it was right, financially, I've went and visited some of the rooms here, on the strip, and it's really tough. Residencies are tough, man. I've always kind of felt like maybe it would be better to go tour and be known all over the country if you can, and then come to Vegas, because everybody comes to Vegas from everywhere all over the country, instead of doing it reverse. Whereas you like start in Vegas and then go out. But I think if it were right, and I think if it felt right, and maybe not a long-term one, but a short-term one, I would definitely consider it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, there you go.
Carl has a question. Carl, oh, you want me to, So his question is actually, if you could describe your, can you describe your life in a 6-word sentence?
In a 6-word sentence.
He's very stringent about it. Strict as fuck.
That's, yeah. Right? Describe my life.
Yep.
My life is rad and chaotic.
Ooh, you hear that? You can't hear that because it's in my ears, but yeah, that's it. I'll tell.
There you go.
Thanks.
I love life. Life is super awesome.
That was very, very quick on the 6 words, much quicker than I was expecting.
Yeah. I kind of surprised myself. I wasn't sure how that was going to pan out there, but
luckily you have 6 fingers. Cause that would have been
luckily. Really, yeah. I could count them.
Well, if we're doing this game, Alicia, I'd like to know, what do you think if you were today and what would you think the last thought you'd have going through your head would be once you cross the grave?
Whoa, that's deep.
It's my shirt. My shirt's doing asking the question. My Hawaiian shirt is asking that question.
Oh, man.
Out question. Get out of here.
My last thought.
Yeah.
Ever. Oof. Now you're talking about things that keep me up at night.
Let's just throw this one on the fire then.
Yeah, just push me in. Is that I hope the people in my life know that I love them and always will.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Now
you
hit it out of park.
No, that's amazing. That's all we really want to know. Hey, look, you know what? This isn't about me. It's about how I felt about you guys. So yeah, that's great. We'd love to know how people can go ahead and purchase tickets for Macabre. And then also any kind of like where they can obviously find you on IG and everything like that.
Yeah, definitely. We have not started promoting Macabre for October yet, but we will. And you will be able to find all the information on how to stream it, how to watch it, and how to get things like a director's cut or a behind the scenes cut of it as well on our socials. So be sure to follow Cherry Bombs Official on Instagram and Facebook and Cherry Bombs Rock on Twitter.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. This has been really a lot of fun. Guys, make sure and check out the full podcast and YouTube Spectacular come this Monday at 9 a.m. Eastern time. We'll have that up there and also on all streaming platforms. Alicia, thank you so much for your time. Congratulations and everything. We look forward to obviously seeing you in January and good luck on the Knotfest LA coming up here. And I think it's November, correct?
Yes, November.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much for having me.
And please give a Shiprock hello to your, please give a Shiprock hello to your other half. And obviously we'll look forward to seeing you both at some point. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again.
Thank you. Before we leave, we want to obviously give a quick shout out to the team that puts this together, including our producer, Alan Koenig, our show engineer, Jennifer Zito, show coordinator, Heather Smith, and the captain, Alan Koenig. And I'm Justin, my co-host here, Chad, also the host of Shiprock 2022. So, well, thank you again. We'll see you guys next week. Again, Alicia, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.